In early 1917, the original Dixieland Jazz Band made the first jazz recording. Over the next 100 years, we've heard transcendent leaps of creativity and staggering virtuosity. We have experienced the music of crushing pain, breathless romance, anger, exhilaration, and humor. This is that story. 100 years of jazz recordings. From WTJU Charlottesville, your host, Russell Perry. Band leader Woody Herman created a distinctive sound around the four brothers, the three tenor plus baritone sax frontline of Stan Getz, Zoot Sims, Herbie Stewart, later Al Cohn, and Serge Chaloff, and the writing of clarinetist Jimmy Giuffre. In time, Getz, Sims, Chaloff, Cohn, and Giuffre would all become distinctive soloists, and all had a role in defining West Coast jazz in the 1950s. In the late 1940s, traditional Dixieland jazz gained a new audience as a reaction to the speed, intensity, and perhaps exclusivity of bebop. Ted Gioia, in his History of Jazz, wrote, "The most pressing challenge to bop, however, came not from these champions of the past. The cool movement, as it soon came to be known, presented an especially promising alternative to the bop paradigm. Spearheaded by members of the younger generation, most of them in their early 20s at the close of the 1940s, cool jazz was, like bop, an overtly modernist music with radical implications. Its exponents shared many of the aesthetic values of the boppers, an allegiance to contemporary trends in music, a predilection for experimentation, a distaste for conformity, and a view of jazz as an underground movement, and many had served as sidemen in prominent bebop groups." Gary Giddens and Scott DeVoe wrote further, "By the early 1930s, cool was used to describe a particular school of jazz born out of bebop that had a light, laid-back, reticent quality. As cool jazz grew in popularity, it was usually associated with white musicians who relocated from the East Coast to California, where the largely segregated film studios offered them financial security with musical day jobs. Their collective styles became known as West Coast jazz." Many of the saxophonists that defined cool jazz shared a common heritage in Woody Herman's Second Herd, also known as the Four Brothers Band, after the Jimmy Giuffre composition, featuring saxophone solos by Zoot Sims, Serge Chaloff, Herbie Stewart, and Stan Getz. They also shared a debt to Lester Young. Gary Giddens wrote, "By 1949, a new generation of tenor saxophonists had demonstrated that Lester Young, not Coleman Hawkins, was the path to modernist enlightenment. The most compelling of them, Dexter Gordon, showed how to combine Young's airborne melodies, smooth timbre, and advanced harmonies with the dictates of Charlie Parker. Stan Getz was caught in Gordon's spell, as demonstrated on his 1946 recording debut when he was 19. His Opus de Bop was as beholden to Gordon as Gordon's 1943 debut was to Young." From 1946, let's listen to the Stan Getz Quartet performing Opus de Bop. Stan Getz on tenor, Hank Jones on piano, Curly Russell bass, and Max Roach on drums. July 31st, 1946. Thank you. Opus de Bop by the Stan Getz Quartet. Stan Getz's defining moment with Woody Herman was his hauntingly delicate solo on Ralph Burns's Early Autumn. Getz had already left the band by the time this recording was released, but its popularity created a receptive audience for his ensuing work as a small combo leader. Gary Giddens wrote, "By early autumn, Getz had discarded the Gordon influence, finding his own way of interpreting Young in the Age of Bebop with a light beaming timbre, almost completely lacking in vibrato. He sounded like a cool, burbling spring, disarmed, almost feminine, yet sure." Here's the Woody Herman Orchestra performing Early Autumn, featuring a solo by Stan Getz from December 30, 1948. Woody Herman and his orchestra, Early Autumn featuring Stan Getz. If there had been a tenor sax in Miles Davis's Birth of the Cool Sessions, Stan Getz would have been an obvious choice. Giddens wrote, "The thing that distinguished Getz even more than his undeniable lyricism, which was unfailing even at breakneck tempos, was his sound, a paradoxical blend of light and heavy, with his rigid embouchure and slightly aspirate sonority. He produced a breezy tone backed by heroic force. Getz's emotional disposition, at once sensitive and aloof, seemed somehow emblematic of the white middle class coming to grips with 1950s America, much as the music of Gordon, Wardell Gray, or Gene Ammons seemed to evince the confidence of post-war blacks. The touchiness of the subject was evident in the clumsy semantics it inspired, but everyone knew that code phrases like West Coast, East Coast, or cool, soul, meant white style and black style, no matter how many exceptions, and they were legion, fudged the issue. Continuing to review Getz's work, the Stan Getz Quintet from 1951 performing Mosquito's Knees from the disc Stan Getz at Storyville, followed by Moonlight in Vermont, the Johnny Smith Quintet from the disc of the same name. Getz at the time was doing studio work, an option largely for white musicians in the 1950s. But as Ted Gioia wrote, when his recording of Moonlight in Vermont, made with guitarist Johnny Smith, showed signs of broadening the popular following he had gained while with Herman, Getz opted to become a full-time combo leader. And we'll follow that with The Way You Look Tonight by the Stan Getz Quintet from 1952. Thank you. Performing Mosquito's Knees, Moonlight in Vermont with Johnny Smith on guitar, and The Way You Look Tonight from Stan Getz Plays. As Giddens wrote, when in 1952 he launched his two-decade association with Norman Granz's labels, he put his stamp on some of the most familiar ballads of the era on Stan Getz Plays, including Lover Come Back to Me, Body and Soul, These Foolish Things, and his incomparable The Way You Look Tonight. We'll return to Jazz at 100 in a moment and the music of Woody Herman alumni Serge Chaloff, Al Cohn, and Zoot Sims. Welcome back to Jazz at 100 and the Further Adventures of the Four Brothers. Ted Gioia wrote of Serge Chaloff, he showed the deepest allegiance to bop among the Herman saxophonists and earned praise for his skill in adapting many of Charlie Parker's innovations to the baritone. Ill health, aggravated by drug addiction, would sideline Chaloff for most of the 1950s, and at his death of spinal paralysis in 1957, he was only 33 years old, but his work with Herman, as well as his various recordings in smaller combos, reveal an expressive, technically accomplished instrumentalist. In The Penguin Guide to Jazz, Brian Morton and Richard Cook write of Chaloff, his approach to the baritone, which never sounded unwieldy in his hands, was restrained rather than virtuosic, and concentrated on the distinctive timbre of the instrument, and its underutilized dynamics rather than outpacing all opposition. Chaloff's masterpiece, the disc Blue Surge from 1956, is both vigorous and moving, not for the knowledge that he was so near his own death, but for the unsentimental rigor of the playing. Thanks for the Memory is overpoweringly beautiful as Chaloff creates a series of melodic variations that match the improviser's ideal of fashioning an entirely new song. Stairway to the Stars is almost as fine. From the 1956 disc, Blue Surge, Thanks for the Memory and Stairway to the Stars.
Thank you.
Serge Chaloff Quartet, featuring Sonny Clark on piano, Leroy Vinegar on bass, Philly Joe Jones on drums, and Serge Chaloff on the baritone sax. Thanks for the memory, and Stairway to the Stars. Let's turn now to Al Cohn and Zoot Sims. Ted Gioia wrote, "Another Lester Young disciple, Al Cohn joined the Woody Herman Band shortly after the Four Brothers recording. Cohn had little opportunity to solo with the Herman Orchestra during this period, but in time would establish himself as an inventive tenor saxophonist and a talented composer. Zoot Sims, who worked with Cohn both in the Herman Band and in a later, long-lived two-saxophone combo, also showed his allegiance to Young, enriched by Sims's unflagging sense of swing and impeccable taste." Morton and Cook wrote, Virtually all one needs to know about Alan Zoot's long-standing association can be found on the sober-sounding improvisation for two unaccompanied saxophones on the disc You and Me. All the virtues, elegant interplay, silk-smooth textures, and all the vices, inconsequentiality, and Sims's tendency to follow his favorite patterns, are firmly in place. A and Z are apt to cover the whole expressive gamut from A to B, as Dorothy Parker once said of Miss Hepburn. The rest of this set is their all but patented, cheerfully swinging, 1-2 bodacious unisons, followed by a thumping good solo out of each horn, and maybe a little cameo from pianist Mose Allison, too. From You and Me, in June 1960, Improvisation for Unaccompanied Saxophones, and Love for Sale, Al Cohn and Zoot Sims.
Thank you.
Improvisation for Unaccompanied Saxophones and Love for Sale, Al Cohn and Zoot Sims. We'll return to Jazz at 100 in a moment and the music of Woody Herman alumnus Jimmy Giuffre. Welcome back to Jazz at 100 and the further adventures of the four brothers. And now it's time for Jimmy Giuffre. Ted Gioia wrote, "Jimmy Giuffre may have been a less distinguished soloist than these peers at the time of the second Herd, but his later career demonstrated the most pronounced evolution of any member of the group. He became a leading exponent of West Coast jazz, later released a series of eclectic, intensely creative recordings for the Atlantic and Verve labels, and by the close of the 1950s had embraced atonality, a progression that none of the other brothers, a conservative fraternity when it came to musical values, could match." Of the LP Jimmy Giuffre III, Morton and Cook wrote, "One of the most distinguished composer-arrangers of the 1950s West Coast scene, Giuffre's long career observed a long, sometimes lonely arc that kept him apart from any bop or cool orthodoxy and along paths almost always of his own choosing. As author of Four Brothers, he was a signature composer of the era, cultivating a brown Chalumeau register on his clarinet and defending the aesthetic benefits of simple quietness. Giuffre later created what he liked to call folk jazz. The Jimmy Giuffre III contains essential early material, including a fine version of The Train and the River, on which Giuffre moves between baritone and tenor saxophones and clarinet. Giuffre's out-of-tempo playing recalls the great jazz singers." From the LP, Jimmy Giuffre III, The Train and the River, from 1956. Thank you. In 1961, Giuffre's Spare Folk Jazz had evolved into an even freer space as he teamed with pianist Paul Blais and bassist Steve Swallow. Theirs was a partnership that resurfaced periodically until the 1990s. Listen to Giuffre playing counterpoint to Blais' pointillistic solo, while Swallow brings a funkiness rare in the avant-garde of the early 1960s. This is a quiet music, full of tension. From March of 1961, Emphasis by the Jimmy Giuffre Trio from the disc Fusion.
Thank you.
Emphasis from Jimmy Giuffre Trio. And that completes our survey of the Four Brothers and the creation of West Coast jazz in the 1950s, featuring Stan Getz, Zoot Sims, Al Cohn, Serge Chaloff, and Jimmy Giuffre, all of whom we will hear from as our history of jazz continues. Just as the Woody Herman Band birthed a number of significant soloists who contributed to the definition of West Coast jazz, the Stan Kenton Band spun off talent like saxophonists Art Pepper and Jerry Mulligan, and a series of significant vocalists, Anita O'Day, June Christie, and Chris Connor. You have been listening to Jazz at 100, a celebration of 100 years of jazz recordings, produced by WTJU Charlottesville and made possible, in part, through a grant from the Virginia Endowment for the Humanities. For annotated playlists and additional resources, go to wtju.net/jazz100. There you can stream any programs in the series you may have missed. This is your host, Russell Perry. Thanks for joining us.